Al, good morning. Welcome to the Welcome Center. Day one of AirVenture Oshkosh 2011. Glad to have you here. Glad to be part of the Welcome Center programming. I'm glad we're back on EIA Radio, and we'll be here every day starting at 11 o'clock with some great guests. And we are going to talk about the Bugatti 100 project that's here and on display. But before I introduce our guests this morning, I want to pull something off your website that I saw that applies not only to your project, but really to everything that's happening here at AirVenture, and it's called Dreams. It says, "All men dream, but not equally. Those who dream by night in the dusty recesses of their minds wake in the day to find it was vanity. But the dreamers of the day are dangerous men, for they may act on their dreams with open eyes to make them possible." And that comes from Lawrence of Arabia. And that, I believe, again, is your project, the Bugatti project, and also the spirit of home building that we see right here on the flight line at AirVenture. And very pleased to bring in Scotty Wilson, who is the managing director of the Blue Project. And just a little background on you, 5 decades in aviation, over 11,000 hours and everything from Cubs to F-16s. You kind of know your way around flying machines, don't you?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah, so, and you're from the Tulsa area, correct?
Originally from Ohio, but we got to Tulsa as soon as we could.
Okay. So the weather here is all right for you?
It's perfect because it's 108 degrees in Tulsa.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds like last week's weather here. But glad you could make it and bring the project with you. And Ladislaus Demange. And did I get that right?
Yeah. Okay.
Pretty close.
I get it.
Okay. And you're also here with the team, joining us at AirVenture. Can you tell us your relationship to the project?
Well, the first relation I have is just I knew that my grand uncle built this plane with a Bugatti, but I didn't know at the first 2 years ago that Scotty was building the replica of this plane, and. It's by friends in Brussels that there was a century of birthday of Bugatti's cars, and there was an exhibition for that. And people, we met all together, and Scotty is a fast man. When I knew that, maybe 2 weeks later, he was in Brussels. I want to meet you. And it was the beginning of a very special journey. Special journey.
Indeed. Scotty, tell us a little bit about the history of the original airplane, the original Bugatti. It's actually on display here at the AirVenture Museum. It's a very innovative airplane, but it never flew. But how about a little history behind it?
The history behind it is that Ettore Bugatti built wonderful cars in the 1920s and 1930s, but he never built an airplane. And as World War II approached, he knew that he had to be in the aviation business in order to take advantage of the commercial activities that would accompany the war. He also knew from his experience with cars that he also knew with his experience from cars that the way to get into the business was to win races and set world records. So he approached Ladislaus's grand uncle, and he said, "Louis, can you design a world record-setting airplane for me?" And after a couple of weeks of study, Louis wrote him back and he said, "Yes, we can build a world record-setting airplane around two of your Bugatti T50B engines." So they formed a partnership, and Louis designed the most elegant airplane, an Art Deco masterpiece that at the time was the most technologically advanced airplane of its era. As they built it, the mission changed. It started as a record-setting airplane and a race-winning airplane, but the mission then evolved into a prototype fighter and a technology demonstrator. As the airplane was being readied to fly, the Germans were marching through Europe. They marched into Paris in June of 1940. Bugatti disassembled the airplane, hid it on his estate outside Paris. Bugatti died after the war. Louis's granduncle emigrated to the United States, and the airplane was essentially lost for 50 years. There was a restoration attempt in the mid-1970s up in Connecticut by a family named Lefferts. That didn't get finished. The airplane spent some time at the Air Force Museum, and eventually Dr. Peter Williamson, who owned the airplane, brought it to Oshkosh, and the EAA restored the airplane cosmetically. The airplane is not airworthy, can't ever be made airworthy. It's in the museum. It's a striking piece of work and an inspirational piece of work for those of us who like fast machines. So that's the history of the airplane. It never flew. It was technologically advanced and an Art Deco masterpiece.
Definitely. When you see the airplane, it says 1930s. It just it has that look, very, as you say, Art Deco, but yet would look perfect on the flight line with some of the innovations that we have here at AirVenture. Let's just go through some of the sort of cutting edge technology that was in that airplane for the 1930s. The wings were swept forward. Why forward instead of backwards? I mean, you know, the rear sweep came in World War II,
right. But
there was not a whole lot of forward sweep before that.
The forward sweep probably was established because there was a center of gravity problem. The initial airplane was designed as a race airplane, but the race rules changed after Bugatti got the basic design established, and we think then that they went to a slight forward sweep in order to accommodate the front engine. So we think that's the reason. There may be some aerodynamic reasons. We know that Ladislaus's granduncle Louis was a forward-leaning, visionary, avant-garde kind of engineer. So he may have seen some aerodynamic positives from sweeping the wing forward. But we don't have any evidence, anecdotal or otherwise, that he purposely did it for an aerodynamic reason.
You bring up another a point there, is that there's very little documentation on the original airplane that still exists. Is that correct?
That is correct. There are no drawings. So we had to reverse engineer the airplane by referencing the original over here in the museum. Once we got started, though, we found out that there were scores, maybe hundreds of component drawings. And what we were able to do after we had the basic structure established was to use the combination of these component drawings, putting them together like a puzzle in your mind's eye. We were able to fill in the blanks in the design so that our construction is more accurate than it would have been without those drawings.
Sure. Ladislaus, in your family growing up, you had a very, very famous granduncle. Were there stories in your family that were told of him and his design ingenuity?
In the family, we knew that Louis was aeronautic engineer, but he spent most of his life in France, and he quit a part of the family, you know. But I was born in the same place, and still in the same place right now, with my parents still living there, who Louis was born. And in this place, in this house, is still a lot of memories of small stuff, or dear pictures, and models who he made at that time, you know. And it was like a ghost in this house. But at this generation, my granduncle and his brothers, my grandfather too, they was all engineers, and it was a very special family about in this time. After that, we knew that he spent the end of his life in New Jersey. He died over there. But we didn't know many things, and because I met Scotty, I learned a lot more about him. And it's like, you know, journey of step lion, a quest of something. And 2 months ago, I have been in New Jersey, in Connecticut, and we found the graves, and maybe I am the first person I've been in to see the graves of Louis right now. Yeah, it's a part of a journey, and very emotional.
And Steve, let me make this point about the DeMange family. In the early 1900s, France was much more supportive of aviation than the United States was. Louis and his brothers built a glider in 1906. They built a powered airplane in 1910. They built an extraordinary airplane with a canard and with an engine in the back and a propeller that went around the fuselage in the center of the airplane. So he was always trying different things. In World War I, he worked for a company called Lumiere, who built propellers. And after World War I, he was called the famous French aircraft designer because he built race planes and world second record-setting airplanes. He's very famous at the time. And it's only through our project that Ladislaus and his family really got to know about their uncle. And so it's an exciting time.
Amazing. As our founder, Paul Poberesny, always says, it's the airplanes that bring us together. It's the people that keep bringing us back. And in this case, it's an opportunity for an airplane to let you discover some of your family's history.
Yes. I made a long way to do it.
Yes. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a moment. We'll talk about the actual Blue Dream project, the airplane that's here at the Welcome Center. And you are listening to EIA Radio Live.